Good morning, Santa Barbara. You're tuned in to KCSB 91.9 FM, and this is the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. Yes, of course, what else could it be but Poodle Radio? My name's Colin Marshall. I write about books for The Independent. I write about KCSB as well in the KCS Beat column on independent.com. That goes up every Tuesday morning, and today's Tuesday, so I should tell you today. It's a column on Josh Redman and 5432 Fun, his show of DIY rock and pop with a lot of taped live shows in there as well. I also host the Marketplace of Ideas Sundays on this station, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. More details about that at ColinMarshallRadio.com. But this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent, so we'll get straight to the indie-related content. We've got all kinds of good film festival stuff lined up today. Our second cinematically correct Poodle Radio episode, or maybe third, depending on how you're counting, because we had Roger on a couple weeks ago, Roger Durling, head of the festival. Today we're going to be talking to more local filmmakers. We've got three sets of filmmakers lined up, you might say. Two directors and one writer and one star of films all made locally. Later on, we're talking to Pete Pepper, director and veteran of the Vietnam War, who's got a documentary called Killing Memories about returning to Vietnam, premiering tonight at the Libero. We've also got John Johnson, curator of anthropology at the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History, and Ernestine Ignacio de Soto, the star of Six Generations, a Chumash family history. And first up is Kevin McKiernan, the director of Bringing King to China, about his daughter's attempts to stage a play about Martin Luther King at the National Theater of China. So it's going to be a full deal. As soon as Kevin rolls in, we're going to get started up. Right now we're hearing a track, one of the many always organized by the Indies pop culture editor Ali Cummingor. This cut is from School of Seven Bells. It's called I Am Under No Disguise. And mind you, that's all run together as one word, I Am Under No Disguise. They're playing UCSB's Event Center on Friday, February 4th, that is this Friday. Once again, it is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. I'm Colin Marshall. Questions, comments, feedback, whatever you want to send me, please do not hesitate. I'm at Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at independent.com. Colin at independent.com, at least that's easy to remember. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about three important local films in just a moment.
UC Santa Barbara Associated Students Program Board is hosting an evening of spoken word with Saul Williams in the UCSB Hub on Wednesday, February 2nd. The work of New York-based poet, musician, and actor Saul Williams has been aligned with many fronts of political activism and cultural expression. Saul Williams has performed with artists such as Nas Marley, The Fugees, and Blackalicious, and became established as a poet and actor through his film Slam in 1998. Doors will open at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, February 2nd, and seating is limited. The event is free for UCSB students. For more information about Saul Williams, please contact Casey Capacci, Brenna Bozigian, or Patrick Alami at the Associated Students Program Board Office, 805-893-3536, or visit asprogramboard.com.
Are you stressed out? Do you wake up on the wrong side of the bed every day? You should do some yoga. Release those mental knots. Be one with the universe. Be one with yourself. Be one with everyone around you. Bring that spiritual side out. Feel free, not closed in this box. The universe is yours.
It's KCSB's past, it's KCSB's present, it's KCSB's future. It's profiles of your favorite KCSB programs and interviews with your favorite KCSB DJs. It's the KCS Beat, the Santa Barbara Independence column on all things KCSB. My name's Colin Marshall, I host the Marketplace of Ideas and Poodle Radio on KCSB, and since I write the column, I'll be really clear on the details. It's the KCS Beat, every Tuesday on independent.com, because why confine your KCSB obsession to the airwaves alone?
Hi, this is Math and Physics Club, and I'm Charles.
I'm Ethan.
Sandra.
James.
Kevin.
You're listening to 91.9 FM KCSB in Santa Barbara.
Woohoo!
Thank you, my love. Thank you, my love.
It is KCSB 91.9. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name is Colin Marshall. Thank you for tuning in. This morning, we're going to be talking to local filmmakers here in Santa Barbara who have projects playing at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, the 26th annual, which is going on this very week, although I assume you know that by now. But if you don't get out of the house much or go on the internet much, there's a free tip for you. We'll be talking to Pete Pepper with Killing Memories, John Johnson and Ernestine Ignacio de Soto with Six Generations, A Chumash Family History, and I assume Kevin McKiernan, who has Bringing King to China, is stuck in traffic. But I'll tell you a little bit about that movie. It is the story of Kevin McKiernan's daughter, who wants to stage a play about Martin Luther King at the National Theater of China, of all places. And of course, there are some struggles with that, as well as themes of the Chinese attitude toward a figure like Martin Luther King. Something I've never thought about myself is how they would think about somebody who I think of myself as so deeply American. And as well, there are themes of the kind of racism that goes on in China between the, I think, 54 ethnic groups in China that there are right there right now. And of course, the Chinese government kind of keeps that on the down low. And as well, there's, of course, the theme of father-daughter relationships, which, of course, you can't avoid when you're a father making a film about your daughter who is trying to put on a theatrical production in China about Martin Luther King. That is Bringing King to China, and that has more information on it on the web at bringingkingtochina.com. Speaking of things associated with the film festival, I saw something I found particularly fascinating this weekend, and it won't be up much longer, so I did want to get this piece of public information out there in case you happen to be interested. It is an installation at the Santa Barbara Contemporary Arts Forum upstairs at Paseo Nuevo. If you've been there, it's on the edge of De La Guerra Street, kind of behind the main State Street action, behind the Paseo Nuevo Mall. Up top, on the second floor, the installation is called, and if I butcher the pronunciation, please forgive me, but I'm going to pronounce this Nymphaea, and it's a video installation, but there's also sound involved. It creates kind of a whole realm for you to be in, or at least for me to exist in when I went in there. It feels like you're transported somewhere else, because it's a lot of footage shot in Lotus Land, but very much surrealized, if that's a word, made more surreal with various types of filmmaking trickery, which as a filmmaker I'm still trying to learn myself. But it involves a dancer, it involves the scenery of Lotus Land, it involves a lot of cement trolls, I guess you'd call them. They're not really garden gnomes, they're statues, and they're my favorite part of this whole thing is what the filmmakers, who include Ted Mills, who you might have heard on the station, do with these statues. There's a lot of zooming in on them, and I can't do justice to it by describing it because, you know, I found it so fascinating. Perhaps you will if you look at it, I don't know, but I know personally I couldn't get enough of staring at these zoom-ins on these cement trolls. And it uses multiple projectors, it uses layered screens in this kind of circle all around the gallery, it uses audio tracks, and I was talking to Ted Mills, filmmaker, about this, and apparently there are only two audio tracks running simultaneously, independent of the video. Again, I'll get into the slightly film geek, video geek talk that I so enjoy. And it creates a whole different environment. You know, I've been to the Contemporary Arts Forum many times to see many shows, and it usually feels like the Contemporary Arts Forum. But with this installation, Nymphaea, it feels different. It feels not like CAF. I'll put it that way. It has its own world now, and it has its own world only for a very limited time. So I do want to get this out there because, of course, it is film festival associated information. And Ted Mills, by the way, also has been interviewed on this station about Wallace Carruthers, a certain eccentric inventor that he has made a comedy short about, and that short is playing in the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. It is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name is Colin Marshall. Questions, comments, feedback of any kind, send that to Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at colinmarshallradio.com. We're going to have some local filmmakers coming in here today. We're going to be talking about some projects screening at the SBIFF, the 26th annual. So stay tuned for more on that. But we're going to line up a track now. Organized, arranged, wrangled, whatever you want to call it, by pop culture editor Ali Cumingor of The Indie. It is from, I'm going to see if I can pronounce this artist's name right, Sebado, S-E-B-A-D-O-H. If I got it wrong, my eternal apologies. This cut is called Dreams, and we're going to have some concert information for you, as well as some concert info on the previous tracks we've heard when we come around the other side on Poodle Radio. On KCSB 91.9 FM, it is the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent.
The Libero Theater's A Woman's Voice series opens on an auspicious note with An Evening with Judy Collins. Collins, whose hits of the 60s and 70s, I've Looked at Love from Both Sides Now, and Sending the Clowns, still thrill us today, has continued and indeed expanded her career as a vocalist and social activist over the intervening years. In maturing, her voice and perspective on the world have become stronger and even wiser than when she burst on the scene. As Stephen Holden of the New York Times puts it, her voice, clear and vibrato-free, but inflected with delicate little shivers, steals through the room like a shaft of light falling through a stained glass window. Collins has always been known for deeply meaningful interpretations of the work of social poets such as Bob Dylan, Phil Oakes, and Tom Paxton, and for bringing the work of other singer-songwriters, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, Randy Newman, to a larger audience. On a personal level, Collins continues to be involved in activist causes, including support of UNICEF and the campaign to eliminate landmines. She is truly a woman of and for this century. Judy Collins will grace the stage of the Libero Theater on Wednesday, February 9th at 8 p.m. Tickets are available from the Libero's box office, the 33 East Cannon Perdido, by phone at 805-963-0761 or at libero.com, where you can print them out at home. KCSB is a media supporter of the Libero's A Woman's Voice series.
That's right, this is KCSB 91.9 FM. My name is Colin Marshall. This is the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent, Poodle Radio. Thanks for staying with us. We have some more film talk starting up right now. We've got two guests in the studio currently. John Johnson, the curator of anthropology at the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History, and Ernestine Ignacio de Soto, the subject of Six Generations, a Chumash family history. John, Ernestine, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
I want to get an idea first to the audience of the historical scope of this project. How far back do we go?
Well, we start the documentary with a generation, six generations back in
right.
Ernestine's family, a woman who was born in 1769. Which is a very momentous year in Santa Barbara history because it's when the first Spanish land expedition, the Portola expedition, came along the coast on their way to found the missions, the first missions in Alta California.
And I want to also get the basic facts about this down. Now, that's how far back we go, but I want to get an idea of how the project developed in the first place. So there's a lot of historical information to get out here when you trace back your family, Ernestine. But what was the origin of making a film about this at all?
I wrote the story probably 30 years ago, and it just kind of sat on the back burner.
Mm.
And we were invited to a museum, to Decarpolis, actually, to do a presentation with other Indian people who were unable to attend after all. So I took that article and brought it to John, and together we developed it. And he did all the historical part, and I did all the family part.
What was the process of developing it?
More or less expanding on it and research, which, again, John was the research end.
We would sit there in front of the computer, the two of us, and we'd use the a lot of the material is based on John Harrington's ethnographic interviews with Ernestine's mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother.
Hmm.
And so we use that as our source material for developing the story and then wove in other historical facts that we knew about the family from research in the mission records and so on.
Perhaps a little more about John Harrington's interviews. When were these conducted? What was the story behind those?
Well, John Harrington grew up in Santa Barbara, and then went to Stanford and studied linguistics, and eventually got interested in American Indian languages, and he especially was interested in the Chumash languages. And some of his first interviews were with speakers of the different Chumash languages in the Ventura and Santa Barbara counties, in San Luis Obispo County. And he learned about Ernestine's great-grandmother, Luisa Ignacio. She lived down there on De La Guerra Street. And he went to her home and conducted interviews beginning, I think, about 1914 and continued over the years were interviewing her.
I want to know more about the process of combining Harrington's research with Ernestine's story. I mean, what was the process of getting those two together? I mean, can you tell me more about that?
Well, my great-great-grandmother shared, my grandmother rather, or great-grandmother shared quite a bit of our history and culture and personal family stories. And then her daughter, my grandmother, and then my mother herself. And, of course, my mother shared them with me. And it just carried on down through the years. And it's been in there all the time, just seething and waiting to come out.
And when was it clear that this had been waiting to become a film?
I don't know, John. What do you think? It wasn't thought to be a film at first.
Right,
it started
right.
out like, I don't know if you know what a Chautauqua is.
I've heard a little bit about those, but
right.
For the audience probably hasn't.
Well, I'm not quite clear on it either, but I was in a conference up in Arcata, I believe it was, and in Humboldt State, and there was a gentleman there who, from down south, with the forestry, I think, Jose Rivera, did a wonderful Chautauqua of a historical character, and I was very impressed, and it just struck me when we had to kind of ad lib ourselves at the Carpolis.
A Chautauqua, then, kind of it's a told story, essentially.
Right, where you actually are the person.
Oh, okay. So it's in that second person type.
Exactly.
In the film, Ernestine takes on the persona of her great-great-great-grandmother,
right.
And then her great-great-grandmother, and then her great-grandmother, and works through the generations that way, to each woman telling her own story. And of course, the first two generations, we don't have those women's actual words, but we do have stories about them that were carried down in the family, and then historical incidents that we know occurred in Santa Barbara that they would have experienced. And so those first two generations are more fictional in that we don't have those women's actual words. But then the other generations we do, because Ernestine's great-grandmother was interviewed by Harrington, as well as her grandmother and mother. And then, of course, Ernestine tells her own story to finish the film.
Now, what were the challenges of taking on the persona of each of your ancestors like that?
Well, that was very strange at first,
right.
And then comfortable. I just had to put myself into their place, or they into me. And for some reason or other, it just happened almost like a seance not to go there, but that's what it almost felt like.
The interweaving of, and tell me if this is the right word even, interweaving of family history with Santa Barbara history. I mean, when you trace the family, do you automatically get the Santa Barbara history with it? Or was there the project of taking these two histories of the place and of the people and putting one on the background of the other? I mean, if that question makes any sense, which was it more like? Was it like getting the Santa Barbara history automatically, or getting both histories and putting them together in this project?
I don't know. I'm going to let John start on that.
Sure.
Well, what you get here is something that you don't ordinarily get, because usually histories told by the dominant culture.
Right.
And in this case, we actually have history told from a Chumash family's perspective, from a woman's perspective in these families. And so you're seeing Santa Barbara history from a standpoint that you don't normally get. And I think it's very revealing, and very revealing about all aspects of how our Native American original inhabitants were treated, and what kind of experiences they had.
You're listening, by the way, to Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM. I'm Colin Marshall, talking right now to John Johnson, curator of anthropology at the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History, and Ernestine Ignacio de Soto, the star of Six Generations, a Chumash Family History, playing at the 26th Annual Santa Barbara International Film Festival. Now, I want to talk about what this, as you said, this uncommon perspective on Santa Barbara history. What specifically does it shed light on? I mean, what are some of the things about Santa Barbara people probably wouldn't know unless they went this route through its history, this uncommon route?
Well, usually when we, in our history books that we get in school, we talk about Native Americans in the third grade and fourth grade, I think, in school. That's part of the curriculum. And then they deal with the mission period. And then American Indian history ends locally.
Right.
We don't have the connection between the end of the mission period and today. And there has been continuity. And there have been Chumash families living here continuously down to the present day. And so our goal in the public performance that Ernestine presents and in the film that is based on those performances is to make that connection, is to show the continuity through time and to make people aware of what Chumash Indians have experienced.
And the act of making people aware, it sounds in one way simple, but I know it's not a simple task. Whether you're working in the film form, or whether it's spoken or whether it's writing, what's involved of making people aware of what they should know about the Chumash people, about their history, about, you know, who they are, where they are?
Well, what we have here, it's made possible by the wonderful collaboration of three generations of Ernestine's family with anthropologist John Harrington. It's thanks to their collaboration that this history has been preserved for us to present today.
And Ernestine, your family, did you get a sense of why they found it important to cooperate with this research to get this documented?
Yes, I believe if we didn't, we would be totally obliterated and non-existent as it is. In all the books prior to the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, we were dead. There was no Chumash left. And that was just wishful thinking, because we are still here.
Now, I want to get an idea of the demographics isn't the word, but of the number of Chumash people. I mean, obviously there aren't none, like you say. The books may have said that a while ago, but how many are there? What's the size of the community?
That's a good question that I'll have to give to John. I know there's quite a few.
Well, for one thing, there's several different Chumash communities. You know, there were Chumash families in Ventura, Santa Barbara, Santa Ynez, and each of those areas actually spoke a different Chumash language. People don't realize that there's quite a bit of cultural and linguistic diversity present among this group we gloss over as being just Chumash, but there's quite a bit of diversity there. And I'd say, to answer that question, it depends on how you define Chumash Indian.
Oh, okay.
You know, is it someone who has an ancestor 7 generations back and thereafter that ancestor never married another Chumash Indian, or the descendants of that ancestor never married a Chumash Indian? You know, there's thousands of people today who have a Chumash ancestor in their family tree. But for those who have continued culturally and in a culturally based community down to the present day, the numbers are relatively a few families that really have that ancestry. Ernestine's mother was the last native speaker who grew up speaking a Chumash language.
Oh. And for those considering seeing this film, seeing Six Generations, a Chumash Family History, let's have a little idea of I don't want to give away too much about the movie, but about something an audience member might learn that they didn't know before from this film.
Well, I think, do you want to answer this?
Yeah, I think what they would probably learn is the pain and suffering we went through, the survival of the women's lineage and the strength and the fact that we're still doing that today as we speak.
The name of the film, once again, is Six Generations, A Chumash Family History, playing at the 26th Annual Santa Barbara International Film Festival. I've been speaking with John Johnson, Curator of Anthropology at the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History, and Ernestine Ignacio de Soto, the star of the film. John, Ernestine, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. Time for a little musical break now from the silent comedy. This is Exploitation. And some concert info for you before we take a break. They are going to be playing when? Looks like Muddy Waters on Wednesday, January 9th. Before that, we heard Acevedo with Dreams playing Velvet Jones on Monday, February 7th. And before that, Rachel Fannin with Thank You. She's playing the Biko Co-op on Saturday, February 5th. Stay tuned. Going to talk to Pete Pepper about his film Killing Memories about the Vietnam War in just a moment on Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM. They'll touch your tender hair. Those demons, the silence, you'll learn to block them. So pick a spot on the wall. Stare at it with all the strength you got. If the lions try to your shape, so you won't.
Scrub your skin, the stain and the fire, your fate's decided. So pick a spot on the wall, stare at it with all the strength you got. If the light is right, see a shape so you won't take it all in the dark. Wide awake when all those men have gone, you cry.
KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. That was the silent comedy with Exploitation. Where are they going to be playing in Santa Barbara? Muddy Waters on Wednesday, February 9th. That, of course, Muddy Waters is in downtown Santa Barbara on Haley Street. My name's Colin Marshall. Thanks for staying with us here on Poodle Radio, this cinematically correct episode of the show. I have on the line right now Pete Pepper, who I mentioned earlier in the program, who has a documentary in the festival, in the 26th Santa Barbara International Film Festival. It's called Killing Memories. Pete, welcome to the program. Oh, Pete, are you with me? Interesting. See, usually they come right onto the line. So one moment, I'll bring Pete's line down. We'll work on correcting that. Stay tuned here on Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.
The spring 2011 incarnation of Tales from the Tavern begins on Wednesday, February 9th with a performance by Ryan Bingham and the Dead Horses. Tales from the Tavern presents singer-songwriters from all over the world for evenings of songs and storytelling. Bingham is known for his contributions to the Jeff Bridges film, Crazy Heart. Other performers in this season's Tales from the Tavern concert series, running select Wednesday nights through April 13th, include Rita Hosking and Malcolm Holcomb, Tim Bloom and Preston Smith, The Paul Thorne Band, Tish Hinojosa and Jimmy LaFave, and finally Kenny White and Stephen Bishop. Concerts are hosted at the Maverick Saloon in San Ynez and are restricted to patrons 21 and over. For tickets and more information, see talesfromthetavern.com or reach them at 805-688-0383.
And this ain't no place for the weary kind.
And one public service announcement later, we are joined by Pete Pepper, whose film Killing Memories premieres tonight at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival at 7 p.m. at the Libero. Pete, welcome.
Hey, it's good to have me on your radio.
Excellent.
Sorry about the technical problem. I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me.
Right. Well, it's KCSB. We have the spirit of improvisation here, but the point is you're on now, and I have a lot to ask you about your film and the time we have remaining in the show. Now, you are a veteran of the Vietnam War. You have revisited not only the memories of that war, but Vietnam itself in this film. And I find from the Vietnam veterans that I have talked to, that is a rarity. What was the path to reach the point where you could do this?
Well, I went back in 2002 with my son, and we had such a good time. Nobody told us where to go or gave us any trouble at all. In fact, they're quite welcoming to us. We spent 3 weeks in the country just on our own, going wherever we wanted to. And after I reunited with the veterans that I served with in 2004, late 2004, after the death of my wife, I thought that maybe going back would be of some therapeutic value to them. So I organized a trip to go back and see if it would help them as well. And that was the genesis of it. I wanted to pay them back for what they'd done for me, not only during the war, but afterwards. In the middle of 2004, my wife committed suicide, and that put me into an incredibly bad spot. And that's serendipitously also the same time that guys I served with 40 years before got a hold of me, and they had been looking for me and couldn't find me. And so I just wanted to pay them back. And the one thing I didn't do on the trip in 2002 was to meet any of the guys that we fought against. So I thought it would be important to see if I could arrange that. And that was successful, and we were able to spend a couple days with two guys who fought against our unit up near the demilitarized zone where we'd fought in '67. And that was a trip, as our guys reported at the time. It was it's very interesting to be able to sit down with those guys and find the points of common human connection.
Now, how do you find Vietnamese soldiers whom you fought against? That seems like it would be an impossible task, but you did it.
Well, it isn't, because the Vietnamese are very well organized. The veterans of the North Vietnamese, the enemy side of the campaign, they have their own reunions. In fact, the five of us, after we had met with the two guys that we'd arranged to spend time with, they went home to their place outside of Hanoi, or the places their homes. And we were in Hue, the old imperial capital, at the Citadel, which had been the site of tremendously fierce fighting in 67, 68. And there was a reunion of North Vietnamese soldiers. They old guys like us. Some of them had military clothing on. Some were wearing medals and the like. We bumped into each other, and it was weird. It was like old home week. We're hugging each other and shaking hands and, trying best we could to communicate with each other.
Now, on
that one side, they're doing the same thing we're doing. They're having reunions and they're talking about their experience.
This is so far from an experience most of us will ever have, is 40 years ago. being, you know, fearing for our lives from a certain group of people, and then meeting up with those same people later. I mean, this what can you get across about sort of the mix of emotions of this kind of thing? I mean, is it at all negative? Was there any negative impulse, like, you know, oh no, this is just sending me back to something I don't want to revisit? Or was it just from the beginning you were kind of, it was a good feeling to see these soldiers that you fought?
Well, you know, I think when you first see somebody you tried to kill, it's not an easy thing. But it I think quickly transcends, I mean, gets to the point of trying to connect with somebody and sharing that same experience, knowing that they, you know, they've got PTSD, they've got war wounds that bother them, they've got grandkids, you know, they're living in retirement, they're troubled in many respects in the same way that we are, because of the experience. And because of that, you can make that connection. You know, when we first saw them, it was funny because when we first saw these two guys, they walked up, we were at a cemetery, a military cemetery where we met them. And they walked up, one guy just immediately started hugging us. And it was just like, okay, dude, I know who you are. You're that just like me.
Was there any feeling that whether you're an American or whether you are North Vietnamese, whichever side you were fighting on, you were fighting because of a greater military conflict, and that wouldn't translate to personal animosity anyway?
Well, let's be clear. In order to kill somebody, you have to make them like subhuman.
Or, right.
You've got to do something in your mind to protect yourself.
Right.
I think that war comes down to personal stuff. It's personal survival. The geopolitical, you know, I just don't, you know, we didn't win in Vietnam, and they never told us, the guys that we met, that they won. And we never said we lost. That just wasn't part of the conversation.
Right.
Need it. I think war is a horrible thing to be involved in, but it gets reduced to a personal equation. And, you know, both during a war and then years later. You know, I've run into Afghan and Iraq vets, and I'd say this in the documentary. And I told them about the trip we were planning, and then after we did it, I'd run into them and say, hey, we went back and we sat down with guys we tried to kill. And I said, just think, in 40 years, you're going to be doing the same thing. You're going to go back to Kandahar or Anbar, and you're going to find some guy and sit down with him and have tea and cookies. And they all say the same thing. And I can't be explicit because we're on the air, but it's basically no way. Okay, cool. In 40 years, let's talk. I won't be around in 40 years, but they're going to be going down.
See parallels. You see exact parallels between your experience and what their experience is going to be.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Oh, yeah. No, because the memories don't go away.
Right.
You know? They just don't go away.
How did
Go ahead. You just have to deal with it. That's one of the ways of dealing with it. Not everybody's going to go back, but I think that for the guys who need to do it, they'll find a way.
I want to know how this personal experience then of going back, of meeting these guys, of taking your own soldiers with you to Vietnam, how did this become a film that we can all see at the film festival this week?
Well, you know, when I proposed the trip, when the trip came together, I thought, geez, we ought to have a record of it. I in a previous career, I'd been a broadcast journalist, a TV reporter, and I thought, you know, at least we ought to have some video. So I hired a couple kids to come along. Well, we used real tiny consumer high-definition cameras and the very good videographers from San Luis Obispo, and we shot, I don't know, 40, 45 hours of material. And then I went back through it, and I just wanted to put something together for us.
Right.
Kind of like a home movie. And the more I looked at the material, the clearer it became that there were some important stories that could be told for each of us, and then started putting it together. And that's, you know, it took a year and a half to do that, but that's what we were able to do.
Can you tell me a little bit about the experience of seeing this film yourself, seeing the final product, the sort of film experience versus the actual experience you had. I mean, did it give you any different perspective on the trip that, of course, you actually took, but now you see it in this form that everybody else is going to see it? I mean, what can you say about that?
Well, it's weird because these are five personal stories, and we're all going to be there for the question and answer session this evening after the film shows at the Libero. And it's not, you know, because of that, you know, I'm invested as a reporter and a participant. The other guys, I'm helping them tell their stories. So it's kind of, you know, it's a different thing. I mean, if artistically somebody made a, you know, if you made a film and somebody said, oh, it wasn't so good or it wasn't, you know, whatever, that's an artistic issue. We're in it, so it's a personal thing.
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't want people to see it and give us a pass, but, it's a real deal. It's not, we're not making stuff up. So, anyway, that's, it's a little bit different, and it's because of that, I mean, my heart's in my throat, having people look at it, because I want them to like it, but I just want them to be, maybe respectful, I don't know. It's a different thing.
The name of the film, once again, is Killing Memories, premiering tonight at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival at 7 p.m. at the Libero Theater. Pete Pepper, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
This has been Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. I have been Colin Marshall. Any questions, comments, feedback, whatever you have, please do send that along to colin@independent.com, colin@independent.com. Thanks, of course, to Ali Cummingore for arranging all the music, as always, and to Matt Kettman for his organizational help. Thanks to John Johnson and Ernestine Ignacio De Soto and Pete Pepper for being on the show, and Kevin McKiernan, sorry you got stuck in traffic or whatever happened. Do stay tuned for the next show. Of course, you want to stay tuned for Radio Causeway, and be sure to tune in next Tuesday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. I'll be here for another Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. Check out independent.com to listen to this show again or any other in the Poodle Radio archive.